Hey everyone, welcome to the Business Alabama podcast from Business Alabama Magazine. I'm Alec Harvey, executive editor of Business Alabama Magazine, and my guest today is Michael Mullis, owner of Kelly & Mullis Wealth Management in Birmingham. On this episode, Michael talks about wealth management in a time of inflation, a fluctuating market, and other factors, as well as some basic steps people can take right now to help build their wealth. Please join me as I talk to Michael Mullis on the Business Alabama podcast. Michael Mullis, thanks for joining me on the Business Alabama podcast today.
Thank you, Alec. Thank you for having me.
Can we start by you telling me about yourself, where you're from, where you went to school, kind of lead up to Kelly & Mullis, because I'll ask about that in a second.
Yes, absolutely. So I've spent most of my life in Birmingham, was born in Birmingham, lived in Chattanooga for about 5 years, from fifth grade through the 10th grade. Beautiful city. Moved back to Birmingham and actually then went to Samford for my undergraduate and UAB for graduate school in accounting. Trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. I just looked at my dad and he said, you know, accounting is a good field to go towards. And that's the decision that I made. Always interested in investments, but felt like the CPA side was a good way to get started in that.
So tell me about Kelly & Mullis. Did you start that right away or did that come later?
That's a great question. So, you know, Kelly & Mullis was actually started in 1984 by Ole Kelly. He was 55 years old and was working at the home office of Liberty National as an attorney and an estate planner. So he would go out to wealthier individuals and work on the insurance side of their estate. And at 55, made the decision to start Kelly & Associates. So in 1984, he made that move. That was before my time. And so I graduated with my master's in accounting in 96. I did my tour of duty in public accounting for 2 years, and then knew that I wanted to go into the investment world. I spent a lot of time interviewing different areas, and a mutual friend actually introduced me to Ole. As we started talking, we really had a good connection. It gave me an opportunity to go into the independent side of the investment world where it was a smaller setting. You know, so I was 26 years old when I started at Kelly & Associates. Zero clients. A big help Ole gave me was having some gray hair when I was meeting with clients. It's kind of funny how times change and it's gone towards me being the one having the gray hair. Instead of people asking if maybe I'm too young to be in the investment side, I'm hearing what happens if something happens to you. So
you're probably tired of that early on and now you wish they would ask you again.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. It's funny how life changes things over time, doesn't it?
So can you tell me, let's say I'm a client of yours, what would you do for me? What kind of things do you all do?
Well, you know, our core value is managing a client's investments, but we've tried to position ourselves as more of a financial quarterback. So conversations with clients are probably 10 to 15% actual investment discussions and 85% all over the place, from estate planning, taxes. I mean, we really get even outside of financial side. I mean, having deeper relationships with clients, I think other than someone's children, their money can create, you know, an emotional side to a relationship. And trying to find a way to be that financial quarterback where someone has a person to reach out to with any question that comes up, especially as they get closer to retirement. I would say the majority of our clients are close to or in retirement.
You mentioned questions that they have, and I'm sure that there are a lot of questions these days, and some of them probably revolve around inflation, which is getting a little bit better, but still is out there and is,
that's true,
is on people's minds. What do you tell people? Can you explain what's going on, and is it necessarily terrible?
Well, you know, what you just said, that getting better, I think that's the key. You know, we were in a 9% inflation rate 7 months ago. And this market is more focused on inflation than at any point in my career. Really, I think we'd have to go back to the 1980s, even before Ole had started the practice, for the last time that inflation was really an issue to deal with. I think that it's caused a lot of us to have to take a step back into that 1980s playbook to try and, you know, understand and grasp what inflation means and what areas of investments work best. But I do feel like we are seeing inflation moderate. And over the course of 23, I expect it to continue to come down. If we look back at 2022, really one of the most challenging, you know, economic environments to deal with in my career. And that's after I started in 99. So I got the very last 6 months of a terrific decade of the 90s. Yeah. We went right into the Y2K, which I'm sure you remember.
Oh, yeah.
The panic. Nothing was going to work after midnight. All the spending that went into that led to the tech bubble. So immediately my first bear market was that 2000 tech bubble bursting. We had 9/11, but really the big one that everybody remembers is 2008, the financial crisis. So going through that first 10 years of my career, a lot of people refer to that decade as the lost decade of returns, where you could have invested at 2000 and really been about break even a decade later, which, you know, presented a whole different kind of challenges. So when I say that 22 was probably the most challenging, I'm not saying that lightly, having survived the three previous bear markets. And the challenge has been, for the first time since the 1970s, we've had inflation with fears of recession. We hear lots of talk of recession. Well, the Federal Reserve, they can fight inflation or they can fight recession. To fight inflation, they do what we've seen, which is raise rates. And the more rates are being raised, the more it can aggravate recession, choking off the economy. And so the fear has been, when will the Fed stop raising rates? At what point would see the Fed at least go neutral in their rate policy? And every bear market rally during 2022 has been driven by a thought that, okay, now the Fed can pause. We can take our foot off the gas of raising rates and see what's going to happen. This rally in January of 23, it was extremely good. We saw the NASDAQ up, more than it's been since 2001, right after that tech bubble burst. But, you know, that these rallies have all been built on a belief that the Fed is able to pause raising rates and then even reduce rates late 23. You know, that, and it's very optimistic to feel that way. And we're seeing some shakiness on that belief in the markets over the course of February. The environment challenge is, at what point does the Fed truly pivot, just first from raising rates, then to neutral, and then finally, when do they start dropping rates? Last three bear markets, Alec, have ended when the Fed dropped rates. So it makes sense that the market is completely focused on inflation and the Fed's rate decisions and almost nothing else. I mean, even international global issues of war, you know, at a higher level that we've dealt with, you know, in our lifetimes, has not been a driver of the markets. It's all been about the Fed.
You touched on this, Michael, but what are some types of investments that people should be looking toward in a situation like this?
In high inflation times, you tend to want to go towards the staples, the things that people have to have, whether it's energy, whether it's, I think a great example, we saw Walmart have extremely good earnings in the third quarter of last year, while Target disappointed heavily. Target, over the last decade, had just been doing so much better than Walmart through their retail sales and higher end, you know, offerings, whereas Walmart has always been more on the value side. And we've seen that consumer shift to how can I save money and shift away from that, the less important needs, whether it's clothing or that retail side. It's more about what groceries and how can I save some money in my budget. So those staples that people have to become very important.
Michael, coming out of the pandemic, we heard a lot about supply and demand and issues regarding that. Is that still out there? Is that getting better?
It feels like that whole supply chain side has started to work its way out. I think two areas that continue to be a shortage supply-wise are housing and then automobiles. you know, the car market has been crazy for a couple of years, where we've seen, as an accountant, you know, I feel like my part of my education was just, you know, untruthful in terms of, you know, you depreciate a car. It's going to go down in value when you drive it off the lot. You know, here these last 2 years, we see used car prices continuing to rise. The value of purchasing a used car has diminished, where prices are very similar to new cars. Housing's at the same. There's a lot of anxiety around what's the housing market going to do? And a lot of that, yes, rates go up, mortgage rates go up, but we have a shortage of housing. And if you look at different pockets of Birmingham, you're going to find very few houses on the market. And those that come on the market, you still have competition of buyers. So even with rates having doubled over the course of 22 mortgage rates, that housing demand has stayed strong. And it doesn't look like a 2008 housing fall apart at all. And that demand's there. And, you know, the supply is just not there inventory-wise. So there are those two areas that I would say are still supply.
This whole situation we're in here now, and you did a great job of explaining it, but can you take lessons you learned from 2008 and other time periods, or is this just so completely different that it's a new ballgame?
Man, I think that is the greatest question, because we always want to go back to a time in history and say, well, here's a chart that is similar to what happened, and so let's use this playbook. But let's go back to 2020. And all of the money that was printed because of the pandemic, we dropped rates to zero. We printed, I think, $10 trillion. The rest of the world was printing as heavily as we were. We've never seen a time in history like that where the whole world's economy was basically shut down and then reopened with all this massive monetary supply, you know, increasing. So I do feel like this is one of those times where there's not another point in history that we can look at and know the playbook, so every analyst, every research paper is all over the place. There's very little tying together, because I don't think that even Fed Chairman Powell knows exactly what happens after you go through all this monetary policy.
Is it a time for customers to review their portfolios, or is this a time where you say, well, close your eyes, don't open it, we'll talk in a year?
Exactly. You know, 90% of the time, the right answer is to take a deep breath and not make dramatic changes. I made the decision, and I guess the fall of 21, that this was one of those times that I did feel like we needed to get outside of just normal asset allocation. For example, bonds, that's a position that all of us have had in allocations, and that's our safety net. Well, we saw in 22, first 6 months, the worst performing bond market since the 80s, at the same time that the stock market was going through its bear. So we saw asset allocation perform very, very poorly in 2022 because of that bond market tying into the stock side. So we actually we removed bonds from our allocation, which is it's not a comfortable step to make big changes like exiting a bond market. Yeah. We've been very heavy tech driven for the last 5 years, exiting those tech side, the growth side of the market, which has been such a strong performer, because as inflation rises and then interest rates rise, the growth of those tech stocks, which have driven performance, slows. And so moving from growth to value became very important. And now as we sit here, gosh, already halfway through February of 23, the question is, how much do we start adding back in? I do feel good about the bond market. Not great, but rates have reached a point that we're getting good yields. Positive side, savings accounts are actually paying us pretty well for the first time in a very long time. But those bond rates give us a good yield. And then as I feel like rates peak and start to come down, there are gains that would be made from those bonds that we own as well. So that shift now is slowly back towards normal allocation, first by adding bonds And then just slowly adding the growth and the technology side. But again, we that run up in January on the tech side, 14% in the NASDAQ, that's a lot very quickly. And I think we're seeing the market kind of trying to digest that much. Everything's going to be perfect. Alec, another term, soft landing. We hear that often.
Right.
And I'll tell you, 6 months ago, I would have said, there is no way we're going to have a soft landing. But you know what? The possibilities are getting stronger. The inflation moderates. The recession side doesn't look terrible right now. The jobs market is strong. So I don't know if there's a chance that we luck our way into that soft landing. But I would say the chances are much stronger than I would have ever thought possible with all the craziness of 20 to now.
Michael, we probably answered several of these along the way already in our conversation today, but what are the questions your customers are asking you? Are there any others that we haven't touched on that they're asking you about?
Yeah, it's very much inflation. When will this bear market end? What signs do we look for? And I really feel that we continue to focus on CPI as a number that's released once a month. And that's kind of the biggest indicator that we're watching. What is inflation doing? The CPI is released by the government, and it's going to report the 12-month rise in inflation. So January's rise versus January of 23 versus January of 22. And is it moderating? Well, our CPI number from last week was lower. So it's the seventh month in a row that the increase was lower, but now still 6.2%. It's not great, but it's a lot better than that 9% number. So that's the goal. If we can see that continue to moderate, and again, I feel like we will, then the Fed can start looking towards recession and how to work through that rather than just purely focusing on inflation. But we've got a ways to go before we can get to that stance. And so that it really has been inflation-driven discussions. We just have not had those topics. I don't know any point in my career that inflation has been a fear prior to this.
I know everybody's situation is different, which is why you're sitting behind your desk. But what are some basic things, three or four things you would tell people to get on a more successful path with their money?
I think something that I've learned early on is definitely pay yourself first. That means save first. And if that can be on autopilot through your 401k, whether it's autopilot into a savings account for emergency funds, 50% of Americans don't have $1,000 in savings and emergency funds. And we know that the expenses that come up now because of inflation don't come up as $100 surprises. It feels like they come up as $1,000 surprises.
Yeah.
So finding a way to have that money coming out automatically into savings and into retirement is important. If we wait till the end of the month and see what's left, I don't care how much has come in during that month. It seems like there will always be very little to push towards our goals. Another thing that we're learning, especially over the last year or two, is keep credit card debt down. Consumers have added $1 trillion in revolving credit card debt over the course of since 20. The consumer has been amazingly strong through this inflationary period, but we're seeing that strength of spending now coming through borrowing through credit cards. Well, with rates rising, we talk about mortgage rates being bad, but credit card rates are a whole different story. So, keeping that credit card debt down, it's easy to get yourself into a very deep hole there without managing that in some way. Not everybody has to have a deep, detailed budget. I know budgeting is a word that most people hate. My clients definitely do not like to think about budgeting. The whole goal is to save and retire and not have to be completely focused on it. But you need to have a good idea of what your spending is and an idea of when that spending gets out of control. Because again, any income can get outspent. So having your hands wrapped around that is so important.
Well, I want to switch gears a little bit. We could talk about inflation all day, probably.
But, absolutely.
We do a segment of questions called business casual, which can take you into the pop culture world. It may still be business oriented. It may not be, but I wanted to ask you about a few things that you're listening to and reading. Are you, do you listen to podcasts? Are you listening to a podcast right now?
I do. You know, the one that I'm actually listening to right now, I actually found during 2020. It's What Bitcoin Did. Peter McCormick is he's from England. And I, you know, it was one that I just stumbled across because my pat answer had always been, what do you think about Bitcoin, Michael? Well, I don't think anything about it. It doesn't feel like a real asset. And in 2020, I think with just a lot of the different chaos going on, I wanted to at least understand the basics of why I felt it was not a good investment. And in doing so, I felt like I learned that, you know, this is not a bad investment. It's a very aggressive, risky investment. And listening to podcasts, it feels like I can get so deep into the technology side that I'm not great at. I mean, that whole world and discussion, trying to explain to a client that this is not a coin that you own. This is, you know, it's electronic money. It's a very difficult discussion, but it's a very interesting concept that didn't even exist until 2010, really brought on because of the 2008 crisis. And I'm not wanting to hold myself out as an expert in any way. Very interesting. I see a lot of opportunity there, but it's kind of like when we started dealing with what is the internet? It's really front edge of what does cryptocurrency do? We're still working on regulating it. And that's a podcast that's been helpful to me over the last couple of years, just in understanding, taking something that I didn't know and telling myself I didn't know enough to keep saying, don't do it.
What about books? Are you reading anything these days you can tell us about?
I love to read. I do read to escape. I love historical fiction. My favorite periods are Greek, Roman history. If you can give me the real history and build made up characters around it, you know, I love to read those kind of books. I actually picked up the John Grisham book that was like the Boys of Biloxi, because it was set in that Biloxi area of Mississippi during the 1950s. Right. And I hadn't read a Grisham book in 10 years. And it's been great. I'm not finished with it yet. And I'm wondering how historically accurate it is, because it's such an interesting period where you've got the gambling and everything going on at the coast and a district attorney trying to take on the mob there. But that's what I'm reading. And so always looking for something outside of the business world, you know, when I'm reading.
What about TV? Are you binging anything? Talk about a new word that we didn't know 10 years ago.
Exactly. You know, I guess I'm embarrassed to say that I've been watching Game of Thrones probably for the third or fourth time through. Love the series. Actually found George R. R. Martin back in the old days when I had to go to Books A Million and just kind of walk up and down the aisles to see what I would find to read. And read that years before, you know, HBO was ever on the table. It's such a broad, I mean, if you've watched the series, I mean, it's all over the place in this world that he created. And it had been years. We were all waiting for the next book. And, I think that he had almost lost control of his world. And here HBO came and stepped in, helped him complete the book. And, you know, I look back, that's just one of the greatest book series. But the TV series actually was equal. You know, it's just not often that you find the movie or the TV reality to meet what was built in your mind.
Especially with something like that.
Absolutely. I think that was done great. It was written so well, and then still going back and watching it, so much fun.
What's your perfect Saturday, Michael?
That's a hard one. You know, so I guess the last 10 years, my Saturdays have been, you know, what are my daughters doing? So, you know, my oldest daughter is a sophomore at Clemson, but she was always a jumper in horses. And then my youngest daughter, who's a junior at Oak Mountain, has been volleyball. So it was every weekend, or sometimes the same weekend, it was, you know, where are we going for this tournament or this show? And now I'm trying to figure out, what do I do now that these Saturdays are coming back? I'm getting very close to having to figure out my own adventures, I guess, again.
And have you figured any of it out yet, or are you still in the process?
I am working on it. I think that the last 2 years I've been trying to find a way to be in the Guinness Book of World Records. The only way that I have found to aim at that goal has been to see if I could be the first person to have every joint replaced before the age of 50. I've had both shoulders replaced, and I've had my right hip replaced. And so I'm halfway there. But, you know, I've always enjoyed exercise for the relief, you know, anxiety or what just the relief that it kind of gives. Right. But the sedentary nature of going through the different replacements, I think it's true what they say, a body in rest tends to stay at rest. And I have been trying to get back into just walking, just get moving. You know, so a good Saturday would be just to get out, get moving.
Well, to wrap things up, I do want to pivot back to your job and just ask you the age-old question, what's the best part of your job? Why do you do what you do?
You know, I think being a people pleaser and wanting to take care of the relationships has its pros and cons, because there's a certain part of what we do where I wake up in the morning and the markets may be green or they may be red, and I have absolutely no control over that. But the relationships that are built with our clients, they definitely go beyond just the investing side. So it's that relationship and getting to know someone and really feeling like I'm actually having an impact, not just on what stock to buy and what fund to use, but just in a bigger picture of how the family's interacting around the money and ways that, you know, we can work together in a personal way rather than just in a black and white numbers way.
Well, Michael Mullis, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Well, thank you so much, Alec. I've really appreciated it.
My thanks to Michael Mullis of Kelly & Mullis Wealth Management, and to you, the listener, for joining me today on the Business Alabama podcast. Until next time, this is Alec Harvey. Find more from Business Alabama in our monthly magazine and online at businessalabama.com.